Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Sacramento International is adding another nonstop destination, and Marriott is still reeling from the news that Starwood accounts were hacked prior to the merger of the two companies.
We make you a smarter traveler at 3:20 when we talk about end-of-the-year mileage runs and the best and worst airlines to fly during the holiday season.
At 3:35, we're joined by our friends from TSA here in Sacramento. You're sure to get some holiday security tips, and if you have a question about airport security, we invite your phone calls.
It's a little past 3 o'clock on a Sunday, and you're tuned to the most entertaining and informative travel show in the country, my friends. Welcome to the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I got two tickets to Paradise. To Alaska, I go north, the rush is on.
I think it's appropriate to say Merry Christmas. Here it is into December already, and the first Travel Guy as an entertainment radio program for December is just getting underway. I'm Tom Romano along with Mark Hoffman. We are the Travel Guys every Sunday, 3 o'clock, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm in studio. Weather is pretty nice today, a little better than we've had most of the week. And Mark, I understand it's no longer a mystery. You're in Missouri.
That's it. We're doing another one of these Sports Leisure Vacations mystery tours. We have flown to St. Louis, Missouri, and we are spending an extended period of time in a little town suburb. Well, I guess it's not a little town anymore. Used to be when my grandmother lived here many years ago. It's St. Charles, Missouri, which is just over the Missouri River from St. Louis. And St. Charles is one of those Midwestern destinations that just does Christmas in the most remarkable way, Tom. They have an old town here. This is the destination that Lewis and Clark left from, mm-hmm. and when they took off on their journey. And that's, in fact, I can look out the window and see the spot where Lewis and Clark took off from right here in St. Charles. They do this wonderful thing every Christmas that they call Christmas Traditions here, where some 90 characters, and these are people who are actors who are actually paid by the local tourism folks here to be characters and be live characters on the street. For example, all kinds of reincarnation of Santa Claus, Kris Kringle and Father Noel and Santa himself and all different versions of Santa from all over the world. And we've got Jack Frost and the Sugar Plum Fairy, and all of these folks are out interacting with people on the streets. And it's Old Town St. Charles. It really creates a very Christmassy sort of feel. You couldn't go anywhere and experience the holidays any better than you can here in St. Charles.
And with that being said, are there a lot of people? Has this become, over the years, a real holiday destination for travelers?
It really has, Tom. I'm guessing it's more of a local / regional destination. Last night, for example, on Saturday evening, they do a thing called Las Posadas here, where it's a recreation of a candlelight walk, and supposedly these folks are clearing the path for Joseph and Mary, who are following behind and are looking for a place to stay. And the walk lasts about a mile, and folks follow with candles, thousands of people. With candles, it ends in a local public park where Mary and Joseph found their accommodation, and the whole story of Christmas is read aloud to people. And it was 60 degrees last night in St. Louis, so which is quite unusual for December. Anybody who's from this area would know. So it was just you just can't create Christmas any better than these people have done here in town. The weather's being a little cooperative, but I'm suggesting even if it snowed here, with all that's going on, it would be a wonderful place to be at Christmas.
Well, I imagine your Sports Leisure Vacationers that have traveled on this mystery tour are just having the time of their life. On this particular trip, was there anybody amongst your group that said, oh, I knew this is where we were going?
No, that's usually a few people pick it out. Somebody figures out where it is that we're going. But in this particular situation, we threw everybody off. In fact, today we went out to a little town called Herman. If anybody is from this greater St. Louis area, about an hour from St. Louis, has a distinctive German history. And so went out there and had lunch at a winery. They have a Kris Kringle market, so folks could shop for locally made handicrafts and things of that sort, yummy baked goods. And yesterday we hit a Route 66 iconic stop here in St. Louis, Ted Drew's frozen custard, which normally frozen custard in December wouldn't be such a good idea, but it was 60 degrees yesterday, so we had a really good time. We've had special dinners and shopping excursions, and like I said, this, if you're looking for some place to that really celebrates Christmas, if you have family anywhere in this area, plan yourself a holiday visit back to the St. Charles, Missouri area, because these folks are, there's a lot of history here. And they really spend a tremendous amount of money and effort to make Christmas special for the people of this area. So we are very lucky to be here sharing it with them.
Awesome. Mark is in Missouri. I'm Tom, and I'm in studio. We are the Travel Guys. And as we do at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on what's going on in the travel news. So, Mark, I know you got a great list of stuff, all kinds of stuff happening this week. Tell our listeners all about it.
Well, we've got Delta Airlines has announced a brand new nonstop service from Sacramento. It's kind of a good news, bad news situation. It's the first time that we've had a nonstop to Detroit. It will start next June when the summer travel starts, the second week in June. The flight will come in from Detroit in the evening, so and get in about 10 o'clock, leaves Detroit about 8 o'clock. Of course, there's a 3-hour time chain difference between Detroit and Sacramento. And then it's going to turn around 45 minutes later and go back to Detroit. So it is a red eye on the return, getting back into Detroit about 6 o'clock in the morning, which would connect very nicely to all of the other eastern and upper Midwestern cities. So another opportunity for folks from Sacramento to be able to another nonstop to another hub airport, which tells you nothing except that Sacramento is a really a growing destination on the airlines maps. We have one of the few underutilized airports in California. So I think airlines are looking at Sacramento and where they can add service. So this is a, like I said, a red eye on the return back to Detroit, but it's one more option that people didn't have, won't have had before that. So good news from Delta Airlines. Marriott, Tom, you probably heard this. You're a Starwood guy yourself,
yeah,
right?
I did, you know. In fact, I saw it for the first time like last night, and I immediately got out my account and started to look to see if I've been mined or anything. Go ahead and tell our listeners the bad news.
Well, you probably may have heard this. It broke earlier in the week. Yeah, Marriott announced Friday that as many as 500 million records in the Starwood's hotel system could have been compromised in an attack that started 4 years ago. According to Reuters.com, the hack on the reservation system exposed personal data of over 300 million customers, including credit card numbers, passport details, phone numbers, and email addresses. Quote from federal cyber crimes prosecutor Mark Rash told Reuters, what makes this serious is the number of people involved, the intimacy of the data that was taken, and the long delay between the breach and the discovery. Marriott, of course, is apologizing for what has happened. Some of this occurred. Of course, it started long before Marriott purchased Starwood, but it goes back to 2014. As of yet, no real complete word from Marriott on who's affected and how much. However, some people who were impacted reported receiving emails from Marriott as early as Friday afternoon. So it's possible that if you are a Starwood or Marriott person, it probably, especially if you were a Starwood person before Marriott acquired, it's probably worth a change of passwords. And it's also worthy of keeping an eye on your account. Now, it also depends on what you had in there. I, for example, am a Starwood member, but my passport number was never in there. My driver's license number, nothing really is in there besides my name, address, and phone number, my email address. So there's not too many people won't have too much information exposed, but some people who travel extensively could have some great exposure here. So we're waiting for word from Marriott on exactly what that exposure is. Tom, have you been checking your Starwood account?
I have. So far, so good. I got involved in Starwood and all of that because of my timeshare. I was hoping maybe they would inadvertently pay my my annual maintenance fees for me. But other than that, they haven't, and so far, so good.
Okay, well, especially folks who have been Starwood customers for a few years, this is something to keep an eye on, and we will have whatever update that we can get for you. The Marriott folks are really not talking to anybody this week. We tried to talk to them on Friday, but hopefully once a few days it settles, we can get some word from them next week. If you are part of Generation Z, these are the folks that were born between 1995 and 2010, 61 million individuals. We are finding out that a lot of those folks, men at 53% and women at 52%, are interested in jobs in the hospitality industry. These are huge jumps over previous generations. It's the first time that the numbers have been over 15% in any generation among any demographic group, and they're over 50% for both male and female. So it means that you're likely to see a lot of young people in the hospitality industry in the years to come, because there are lots of hospitality schools, places where you can go to learn to be a hotelier or to work in a restaurant. A number of colleges are offering that curriculum now, so there are lots of places for kids to be able to learn. And one more item here in the news before we take off today that's important, I think, to Sacramento Flyers. Southwest has announced that they plan to start raising airfares a little bit. Airfares have been surprisingly stable for about 3 years now, so we're probably overdue for a little bit of a bump. Southwest says they're going to raise fares between $2 and $5, so not anything too dramatic. You can expect that all of the airlines will follow. It wasn't too long ago, Tom, where the airlines tried to raise fares every 4 to 6 weeks, but they've kind of backed off on that now. Of course, the rise in fuel prices hurt them a little bit, but now those fuel prices have backed off, so hopefully whatever pressure was being put on their margins is backing off a little bit. Another interesting little point here, the ancillary revenue from passengers, your baggage, your buying of upgraded seats and stuff like that, is roughly $21 per passenger. So think about that. Every person getting on that plane has paid an average of $21 more than what their ticket said just to get on the aircraft, and thinking that there's maybe 150 people on that plane. So that's a lot of money. And multiply that by the number of flights, and that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. When we come back here in about 3 minutes, we're going to give you some end-of-the-year mileage runs suggestions, if that might be something that you're thinking about. And what is the worst airline to fly during the holiday season? Find out next on the Travel Guys.
Country roads, take me home.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, everyone. It is the Travel and Entertainment Guys. I'm Tom Romano along with Mark Hoffman. Mark is in Missouri. I'm in studio. And as we promised, we're going to talk about the best and worst airlines to travel during the holiday season and a little bit on mileage runs. And Mark will explain what mileage runs are all about. I didn't know myself until, you know, I hooked up with this guy. Mark, tell our listeners, what is it? What's mileage runs and when do you do it?
Ah, okay. Well, mileage runs are kind of a title for those of us who, if you have attained a certain level of status with an airline, different medallion, platinum medallion or 1K or I don't know what American calls it, but you've attained a very high status level with an airline and it's coming close to the end of the year and you haven't traveled the miles or spent the dollars to qualify for being at that status in that airline's program for the next year. Now, in some cases, you know, you could say, well, you know, you step back from here, you don't get quite the benefits. In my case, as the owner of a tour company. I find that having high status on an airline helps me tremendously in after-hours situations. I can call the airline, the United 1K desk, and say, I'm a 1K traveler. I have a group that has an issue. The group desk is closed. Will you help me? And inevitably, they do. So when you've got 25 or 30 people depending on you to solve their travel problems and somebody helps you do it, it doesn't take very many of those solutions for it to be very advantageous from a financial standpoint. But many people find that, back to the subject here, that if you're coming up, I was 6,000 miles short on United of getting to 100,000 miles for the year. Clayton Whitehead, one of our road reporters on the Travel Guys, was about 3,000 or 4,000 miles short. So Mark did a mileage run. I created a ticket that flew me to Houston and then to Denver and then back to Sacramento all in one day. And of course, I had no luggage other than my carry-on. You know, It's always good to take some clean underwear and a toothbrush with you just in case something happens that you didn't anticipate along the way. But bought a seat in first class. And the reason I did that was because it's roughly what that route I just told you is roughly 3,000 miles and I needed 6,000 miles. If you fly first class, you get double mileage credit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I concocted my mileage run, was to go to those three cities, pay up. It cost me about $800 to protect my status for next year. Mm-hmm. Clayton, on the other hand, much smarter man than the boss, for $290, $260, he's got an itinerary that takes him to Houston and Austin and Los Angeles and back to Sacramento to get the qualifiers that he needed in terms of mileage. And he did it much cheaper than I did. But that's when you hear somebody talking about a mileage run.
There you go.
We're talking about a situation where we're taking, we're doing travel that we don't necessarily need to do. Last year, Clayton made a trip to Africa. He needed mileage, that much mileage or that many dollars. And so he just decided to do a 4 or 5 day trip to Africa. He'd never been there, wanted to go. This was his excuse to go. I'm not sure I would go that far for 3 or 4 or 5 days. But those of us who are road warriors, I'm sure there are people listening to this right now who are saying, yeah, that sounds like something I would do. So we do some strange things to protect our status and our benefits sometimes when we're traveling. I know people who do hotel runs, who will go and maybe they need 5 stays.
Mm-hmm.
So they will go to, if they need 5 stays with Hilton, they'll find a place where there are 2 Hilton branded hotels next to each other. They will check into one for a night and then check out and check into the one next door and check out and check into the one next door and so on until they get their 5 nights and all of their credits. Sometimes they do it in their own hometown and they don't even stay in the hotel rooms.
Right. You know, you remember when we had the gal from Mommy Points on, and her and her husband and kids went on a holiday, and she wanted to do just that. And so to the chagrin of her family, what they did was they, on their 5 or 6 day vacation, they would stay in a hotel, check out and check back in another location within the same area and with the same hotel. And they got their stays. They had their vacation. They just had to move a lot.
Yes, and that's, I remember Heather talking about that, and that's, so sometimes you have to decide. If your status level is very low, you may decide that you don't need to save it. You can do it without it a year. It also speaks to why you concentrate your allegiances in some cases to just 1 or 2 brand names. But anyway, mileage runs are kind of an end of the year thing. I haven't ever heard of anybody doing one on a cruise or on a train yet, but I'm sure there are folks who do that also. One other thing we wanted to mention here, Tom, before we go, and of course our TSA friends are joining us after the break, so I want to remind people that if you have a question that you about security that you would like to ask our TSA guests, they are going to be live with us in studio. You can give us a call and get online right now at 916-921-1530 or 800-834-1530, 916-921-1530 or 800-834-1530. Get online if you have a security question that you'd like to talk to the TSA guys about. We promised folks, Tom, that we would talk a little bit about which airports to avoid in the wintertime, which airlines do better. The airlines that do better and the airports that do better, rocket science here, the places in better weather destinations generally.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of exceptions to that. Los Angeles is an ongoing mess. Always avoid San Francisco in the wintertime because any kind of low ceiling or bad weather is going to knock out a runway, and then San Francisco is a losing proposition unless you can be on the first plane out in the morning and your plane was there overnight. One airport that kind of surprises people as being a good bad weather airport is Denver, Colorado. The reason for that is because when they built that airport a couple decades ago, they've got five runways. They all point in different directions. Therefore, no matter where the weather comes from or is headed to, a couple of the runways are pointed in the right direction geographically to allow for takeoffs and landings. So it's very rare. Denver has to get a huge blizzard, whiteout conditions to really knock that airport out. So it can slow operations, but Denver is a good spot. Of course, the southern airports, Phoenix in the wintertime is a great place to fly in and out of. Now that we're past the hurricane season, Denver is another one that I would highly recommend. And places like Detroit in Minnesota and particularly Chicago, either Midway or O'Hare, are places that score very poorly in the winter months. So that gives you a little bit of an idea. Denver is kind of the surprise, but really and truly, if you can't be on the first flight out, don't do anything in San Francisco until April or May.
Our TSA guests are standing by to answer your questions. They'll join us after we stop for the news here with the Travel Guys. The leaves are brown, the sky is gray, and we are the Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, and as promised, it's time to bring in our favorite guests from the TSA. Today, we were going to have two. We were going to have Sid Hanna, who is the head of the Federal Security. He's the Federal Security Director, and Dale Keller, he's his assistant of the Federal Security Directors, and but Sid couldn't make it, and I think any parent can recognize this. Sid had two extremely ill boys that were throwing up, and so it's too graphic for the radio. Anyway, so Dale is going to do all the heavy lifting today. Dale, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us here on the Travel Guys.
Well, thank you. You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
All right, and listeners, if you're just tuning in, Mark is in Missouri, and he'll be with us through this segment, too. By the way, we're going to give you, our listeners, an opportunity to call in and ask Dale some questions. You know, a lot of travelers make their way through TSA. Sometimes, you know, you do it, and you leave with questions. Perhaps you're going to be traveling over the Christmas holiday, and maybe you're a new traveler, and you have some questions that you need answered. This is a perfect opportunity. You can call in and ask Dale a question today at 916-921-1530. That's the local number, 921-1530, or 1-800-834-1530. If you're out of the area, 1-800-834-1530. We'll take your questions, and Dale will give you the answers. In the meantime, Dale, welcome to the program. You've been on with us a couple of times before. Could you bring us up to date on anything that's new, something that you want to make sure our listeners know about as they travel out at Sacramento International Airport, or any airport for that matter, since we spoke last?
Yeah, definitely. One thing I think everybody's seen in the past couple of years is we're growing. Everybody's growing. The days of arriving at the airport 40 minutes before your flight, thinking you're going to make it through security on board your flight, no problem, those days are gone. So I really encourage everybody to plan on getting to the airport early, have plenty of time to check your bags, do everything, and get through security, and then make it to your flight. Through this last Thanksgiving rush, hundreds of people were screaming that they're late for their flight. And you know, the way Sacramento is growing and continues to grow, it's between parking, shuttles, checking in, everything, you've got to give yourself that extra time.
Got it. Mark?
Well, and what is it, Tom, that we're always telling folks at this time of the year, you know, the most critical part of your entire vacation might be the extra 20 to 30 minutes that you gave yourself in the morning when, or the afternoon when you were getting ready to depart town, because between parking lots being full and lines being long, and you may be traveling with somebody who doesn't normally travel, or maybe you've got a relative who needs a wheelchair or is traveling with a walker, or you've got something, you've got a couple of small children who have never traveled before or never taken a long plane flight, or you know, you're doing something that's a little out of the ordinary. So it indeed is, and there's a lot of stress at holiday time because of family gatherings and the like. So do all of us a huge favor and allow yourself a little bit of extra time at the airport. Dale, I wanted to ask you, is there any particular item that shows up in Sacramento? Is there anything that people that you would say, wow, people leave your blank at home? Is there a particular thing in Sacramento? And a lot of the TSA stations have had issues with folks bringing firearms and the like. So besides asking you if there's anything unusual about Sacramento, do we have the firearm issue in Sacramento frequently, or are folks a little better about that in California?
You know, unfortunately, no. We do definitely have the firearms issue. The week leading up before Thanksgiving, we had two one day, one the next day, and it was something that it kind of does ebbs and flows, but it's not uncommon to see, I would say, 2 to 5 a month, depending on the month, of somebody forgetting that they have their handgun, typically, obviously, in their carry-on baggage, and they, you know, the common excuse is, oh, I forgot it was there, which makes you scratch your head that how would you forget you have a weapon in your bag. But that is something that, yes, California or Sacramento specifically, we are on the one of the higher rated airports as far as people forgetting their firearm.
Wow. Is there any other item besides firearms that specifically, I mean, even if it's just a nuisance item that you know, that guys come in and say, wow, I really wish we could get people to stop bringing their through security.
You know, since this is a family show, we'll keep it on that level. But I will tell you, people fly with everything. The water bottle is still a huge one. It really is. Or the you know, the liquid, the refreshment. It is huge that people still continue to forget to take those out. And then really, you know, past couple of years, we've implemented some changes. The personal electronic devices, a lot of people forget that their iPad is the size of, you know, it is larger than a cell phone. It needs to be removed from the carry-on. So I'd say those are kind of the bigger ones that the officers are running into.
Dale. Hey, well, I forgot to turn my microphone on. This is my first time here. By the way, it's Mark and Tom along with Dale Keller. He's the Federal Security Assistant to the Federal Security Director. By the way, if you have some calls, you'd like a question answered in regards to the TSA, Dale would be happy to answer them for you. In fact, why don't we take a moment and go to one we have right now, Dale. Let's see. We have Connie in Sacramento. Connie, welcome to the Travel Guys. What's your question for Dale?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to know if and when we are going to start really enforcing the size of carry-on bags.
Yeah, I totally understand that question. Unfortunately, TSA on the screening side, we don't oversee that for enforcement. That is up to the airlines to enforce. I know different airlines have different reasons based on overhead space, type of aircraft, everything. But I agree, the number of carry-on bags that you see people coming through the checkpoint with, you know, they're huge and they're numerous, and they're trying to squeeze them through the screening equipment up there, and they sometimes cause a bit of a backlog. But it is something that's talked about. However, it is unfortunately, it is more complicated than just restricting it because of the different rules and the different customer service aspect that the airlines have. All that comes into play. So I would love for it to be enforced, but unfortunately, that definitely is above my pay band, if you will.
Wow, Dale, that was a really nice way of saying that, you know, it's really the airline's responsibility.
Yes.
To enforce this, not the TSA's responsibility. I mean, basically, if somebody can cram it through the metal detector there, I mean, if they can get it on the belt and it goes through, then you guys are going to inspect it. That doesn't mean that it's legal to go on to the airplane. And Connie makes a really good point, because at this time of the year, there's nothing worse than somebody who hogs the overheads, you know, who shows up with way more carry-on luggage than they're allowed, refuses to put anything under their seat. And so, you know, they get on the plane and take up a half of a carry-on bin that's designed to accommodate six people. So I can see where Connie is a little concerned about that. It would be nice if the airlines would do that, but unfortunately, you guys at TSA, I don't know that there's a whole lot that's not really your job.
No, definitely. That's on the, especially on the screening side. That is, they bring them to us. They work through. We screen them, make sure there's no threats, and allow them on their way.
Dale, what is the most common mistake that people make when they get ready to go through security?
I'd say the most common mistake is, well, we have a term for it I won't use here, but unfortunately, it's like the brain turns off. People, I think it's stress, obviously. They start wondering what they have to do, and all the time, if people were to listen, you're constantly, the officers are always explaining what needs to happen next, And we see a lot of people who just simply, it's like they turn their brain off, and they'll start putting things on the x-ray. We had, just recently, we had somebody with they had a cat in a carry-on. And they put their cat through the x-ray. And so it's, you know, you see this, it's like, okay, come on, that's your pet. You know, you should be thinking a little bit more. But, you know, there's that. And then, you know, then the not divesting, not taking out all the, you know, the electronic devices, the bottles of water, taking things out so that when your items are going through the x-ray process, they go through the first time without a rerun, without additional inspection. And that's really what we see a lot.
So your advice is, you know, don't try not to get rattled. Use your brain. Think ahead. Listen.
Yep.
You know, and especially for those that it's their very first time through. You know, I think most people know the normal procedure as to what it is that you have to remove and get mm-hmm. ready and quickly go through the list. For the guys and the gals, the things that, of course, are not going through the x-ray machine but are on your personal body, well, you need to.
Oh, for standard screening, remove your shoes, light outer jackets, all metal, any, you know, billfold, keys, anything that is in your pockets needs to come out. And yeah, you're in your socks or sometimes bare feet, and you go through and for standard screening, it's advanced image technology. It's a scan of your quick scan of your body to check for anomalies, and provided all those items are out, you cruise right on through. But when you leave those items in, then it takes rescans and then ultimately leads to a pat down often.
Well, before we take a short break, Mark, you have another question you want to run at Dale here?
Well, no, after the break, though, I want to ask Dale, I hate to sound like a one-trick pony, but Dale, you know, still, when we ask people to write us at travelguysradio.com with questions that they might have about travel, and when TSA comes up, we still have a lot of people who ask about marijuana laws, and especially since the Los Angeles airport indicated that they weren't really interested in prosecuting people who were caught with it because it wasn't illegal in California. So when we come back, I'd like to get an update from you on that, something that will help our listeners understand, make their decisions about whether or not that's going to be in their luggage.
Absolutely.
All right. And once again, if you our listeners have a question for Dale today, 921-1530, that's 916-921-1530, or 1-800-834-1530. We'll be back with more right here on The Travel Guy. It's Mark and Tom along with Dale Keller with the Federal Security Director, and we are The Travel Guys, and we're answering your questions here on the line and also quizzing Dale about some things that I know that you want to know. Mark, we were talking, and Dale, we were talking right before the break about what's been going on in Sacramento in regards to folks that either feel that it's okay to bring their marijuana, their vaping devices or whatever along with them in their carry-on and so forth while they travel. A few months ago, or not that long ago, really, down in L.A., they had pretty much said that, well, you know, we're not gonna arrest you. Because here again, we're dealing with California. However, if you're traveling to a state where it's not legal, well, you're going to deal with a whole other situation when you get there. What is going on at the Sacramento International and the TSA here? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's unique because obviously marijuana is still illegal under federal law, and the security checkpoint is a federal location, federal area, if you will, under law. And so it is still technically illegal. However, TSA is not in the job to find marijuana or narcotics, things like that. We have a very specific job looking for explosives, incendiaries, firearms, anything that is a threat to national security and transportation. So when we may come across a green leafy substance, if you will, in these bags, we simply ensure that we complete the security screening process, and then we alert our local law enforcement, which in our case is the Sacramento Sheriffs. And then they will then in turn deal with it per the local laws and whatever is going on.
Do you know what, has there been any issues or has there been experiences where the Sheriff's Department, where it was brought to their attention, and do you know what their actions were?
Their actions will always be within the ordinance and laws of California. Typically, they will they'll inform the person that they are in a federal checkpoint, and they'll base things on there. Oftentimes, honestly, if it is a small personal amount, I don't know because it's beyond us at that time. It's closed out as far as TSA is concerned. I'm confident that they are allowing them to travel with it. However, it all depends on who the person is, what they are, and how far it's gone. You know, the law enforcement does have their job to do as well when they do find it or when they're made notified of it.
Understood. All right. Thanks for that answer. Okay, let's go to Pam. Pam, welcome to the Travel Guys. You're on with Dale. Tell us your situation. What's your question?
Hi there, guys. Thank you so much for taking my phone call. So my question is, every time I go through the X-ray machine, I end up having to get patted down, and I have no metal on my body, no metal on my clothes, nothing like that. But I always end up getting patted down, and I'm not sure why that is.
Okay, quick question. First, are you pre-check or are you standard? Are you going through the advanced image technology, the one where you stand in, raise your hands above your head?
Or,
yes. Okay. It's difficult to say, honestly, because what that system does is it's looking for anything that's out of the norm within your body contour, if that makes sense. So you're looking for anomalies. It's not necessarily alarms. When the machine says, hey, there's something in whether it's the waistline or the pocket or shoulder or wherever, it's just because it could be buttons on clothing. It could just be the way your clothes are sitting on your body. There's a huge number of reasons why this could be occurring. But usually if you're wearing standard clothing and you're not moving during the scan, I can't give you a full answer because I honestly don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I always wonder, it's usually by my shoulder, so I don't know why, but I just don't know why that is. And I'm very conscious and very aware of it because it's happened to me here on domestic, stateside, and also internationally.
So, oh, wow. Well, the one thing I can, recommend is TSA pre-check. You go through a walk-through metal detector, not through the AIT. It's $85, good for 5 years, a little bit of work, but then you breeze right through security, too.
Right. Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dale, we know that in Sacramento, out at the Terminal A, they're looking at adding some more lanes. So what's the game plan?
Well, we've already added the sixth lane. We're going for a total of seven, and we're hoping that comes online in January. Right now, we're working on the automated the exit lane technology, similar to what is in Terminal B. Once that's installed, then where the current exit lane is where that seventh lane will go into place. So by then, we've already seen since that sixth lane's been in, a significant reduction in the morning wait times, and I'm sure once we have that seventh lane in, we'll even see a better reduction in that morning push.
Awesome. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Chris. Chris, welcome to the Travel Guys. What's your question for Dale today?
Yes, hi. I'm thinking of applying for a global access pass since I'm planning to do more international travel. I wanted to know, as a Sacramento resident, where is the nearest place I would go for an interview, and what would they be asking me in the interview? And if I do get it, what will it actually get me in terms of the speed of access?
Sure. Location right now is San Francisco for your interview. I know that Sacramento CBP is working on to begin doing some interviews. Unfortunately, a different agency, I can't speak 100% for them, but I do know that it is in their works to start doing the interviews in Sacramento, which would be, you know, very handy for many people. As far as what that will do for you on the TSA side is it will give you that known traveler number, just as TSA PreCheck does, and allow you that expedited screening when you're flying. And then on the Borders Custom Protection side, I'm sure it gives you their equivalent through the custom search.
Mm-hmm. And what do they ask you in the interview? What's the interview like?
You know, I don't know. Again, that's kind of their program. I would imagine that it is based upon your history, where you've been, where you've flown, you know, anything that you may have in your personal history. I'm sure it goes over your criminal history. Not everybody has one, obviously, but if whatever you have, I'm sure they want to talk about. But you know, honestly, again, that's their program, and I'm not really up with that.
Okay, thank you very much.
No,
thanks, Chris. Okay, Emily, in Sacramento, you got a quick question for Dale. I think he's going to have an answer for this one right off the real easy. Hi, Emily, are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
All right, do you have a question for Dale?
Yeah, I was wondering if you could get your cat through PreCheck.
Your cat, yes. Yeah, it's you can travel with your animals through no problem.
All right, there you go. But you don't have. Here's the good news, Emily. If you've got PreCheck, your cat doesn't necessarily have to pay the $80 to get a PreCheck thing too, and go through all that security questioning. You know, and unless you got a questionable cat, Mark, you had a question that you've been holding on there. Are you with me?
We're getting close to the end here. Dale, I just wanted to ask you, as we talked before, at holiday time, we have a lot of people who are traveling with children and who may or may not be experienced travelers. I know that you're not a child psychologist, but is there anything in particular that you have witnessed or that is TSA lore, anything that we could tell folks who are traveling with kids that might help them with the whole security process?
You know, a lot of it is, especially families, standard screening, not expedited screening by any means. What we found works the best is ask. You know, the families, they come up, they ask us to help them, or they might ask us some questions to assist them better. And, you know, traditional, typical families, usually things go through well. When you start talking special needs, like I have a son with autism, I know what it's like to travel with special needs, very stressful. And we do have programs TSA-wide to assist with that. And we have passenger support specialists at each airport who will work with either families with special needs, children or adults, older individuals, militarily severely wounded, or any unique situation. The families or the individuals can contact the TSA Contact Center, which is on our TSA.gov website, and make arrangements to get that extra assistance going through if it's needed. And if it's not something where they want to go to having a dedicated person working with them, then it's simply, ask for a little help. We're more than happy to oblige.
Dale, before we wrap up here today, and I throw it back to Tom here, I just wanted to thank you very much for coming in and spending the time with us. You guys have done this a few times, and it really puts a human face on TSA, and I think it gives us something that not every city has. So thank you so much for your time and your willingness to be a part of our program.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Dale. Yes, I echo Mark's comments. It was difficult to find somebody like yourself and Sid to spend some time with us, and we feel honored that that you'll give us your time and our listeners your time to be here with us on the show. Mark, final words.
Just remind everybody to dance like nobody's watching. We'll have a mailbag segment for you next week. Take your questions. You can send them to travelguysradio.com.
All right, my friends, stay well. We'll see you next time here on the Travel Guys.